Welcome to the Mutthammer Podcast, episode 78. I'm Mo. I'm here with Owen, Ellen, Al. As Fraser labelled you on the news post we put out about the last one. Oh, was that you?
Yeah, I did it.
Oh, so that's officially approved. You're Al now.
Yeah, well, that's what my mum calls me and my friends. Actually, they call me Ali. Well, a lot of my friends call me Ali.
We're calling you Al. Mo, Owen, Al. What's going on? How are we all doing?
Good.
Yeah, good.
I feel better, so I'm happy. Not 100% better, but like 70% better.
70%. That's fine. That's a 7 out of 10 in a Metal Hammer album review. That's a solid score.
Decent.
Despite what people think. That's actually a positive. Not that we're bitter about that
kind
of stuff.
How are you,
Merlin? I'm fine. Thank you for asking. God, it's only taken 78 episodes. Cheers. I'm great. I'm in a good mood indeed. Went to see Metallica in Prague on the weekend. That was good fun.
I want to hear all about that, please.
I'm going to talk about that in a little bit, I think. In the meantime, everyone should go out right now and pick up, if they haven't already, which you definitely should have, our spectacular latest issue. It features the one and only Tool on the front cover. 13 years in the making is their new album, Fear Inoculum, that is out at the end of next week. It's actually finally upon us, isn't it?
Yeah, bloody it's really hell. Weird.
Bloody hell. We're allowed to talk about the fact we've heard it now, aren't we?
I reckon so, yeah.
The embargo's gone. Hooray! we can talk about that. You can read our quote-unquote official and a very extensive Metal Hammer review from Mr. Stephen Hill in the issue that is out right now. But I'm very keen to know your opinion, Elle, having heard it twice in a room surrounded by other writers and executives and PRs and such like.
Well, the first time in the room was very, very loud, which was a bit like overwhelming. It was quite hard to take in because the whole time it was just like, this is really, really,
it was really,
really
loud, wasn't it, on that?
And apparently they'd specified it needed to be that loud. And it was a bit like, I was trying to sort of take it all in and didn't really know what I thought about it and was kind of like, yeah, it sounds like Tool, but I don't really know what I just heard. And then the second time I was able to sit back and kind of get into it a little bit more. It's, to me, it's kind of what you would expect in that Tool have gone further than they have before down their Tool proggy ways. You know, the songs are very long, very rhythmic. Very much felt like I was being put in a trance listening to that album a couple of times. I swear the first time as well, there was some kind of incense piped into the room. And if not,
you kept saying that afterwards, yeah.
If not, there's something weird going on with my brain. And yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff in it. Like, lyrically, I did wonder whether Maynard was kind of drawing from the same well as Eat the Elephant in the kind of talking about politics, but with a small p, I guess you would say, not like actual political parties, but kind of the way we interact with each other as humans and the way we are. And there's a lot about the breath, and you kind of get this sense that there's this feeling of kind of human connection and sort of exposing people who are exposing kind of wrongdoings. And there's, yeah, it's kind of very, it feels very kind of connected to humanity and nature, and there's lots of kind of naturey interludes of water, and there's a lot to explore basically.
Yeah, I think we should maybe do a bit more of a deep dive on it next week once it's about to be in a lot more people's ears, and then maybe we can talk about your kind of overall thoughts on it.
Okay,
does that sound
in
good?
In the meantime, buy the issue.
Yeah, in the meantime, buy the issue. Yeah, but we'll go into a bit of a deep dive on the Tool album next week, I think, because we'll have got a chance to listen to it a bit more, because as often happens with these albums, you get, one, two, maybe three listens in a room somewhere in a label head office and then expected to come out with hot takes, which can be quite difficult. But as I said, Mr. Stephen Hill, I'm a writer, has heard it a few times. He's got a very extensive review in the new issue right now. It also features a very in-depth and honestly fascinating conversation with the band themselves, conducted by the lady to my left, Miss Eleanor Goodman. It's very, very good indeed. And if that wasn't enough Tool for you, there's also a big 16-page Tool bonus magazine that comes with the the current issue of Metal Hammer as well. So shit tons of Tool, basically. We're not doing this by halves.
There's so much Tool in that bonus magazine. It's like, obviously it's a magazine made of paper, but if you could weigh the weight of those words in metal, you wouldn't be able to pick it up because it would just be too heavy.
A weird infinity symbol of
metal. Your arms would fall off.
And yeah, there's interviews with Killswitch Engage, and they're a really cool look into the real thing by Faith No More turning 30. There's a free Killswitch Engage art print in there, free thrash metal stickers. There's a really cool interview with Lizzie from Hailstorm in there. There's an interview with Volbeat in there. Loads and loads and loads of stuff. It is really good. We're very proud of it. As I say, when you finally get Tool on the cover of your magazine, you don't piss about. So go pick it up right now. And we will do more of a deep dive into the Tool album next week right here on the podcast as well. So there. Alice.
Hello.
What did you get up to this weekend?
I went to Norway.
For what?
For Midgard's Blot.
That sounds impressive. Yes. I saw some very interesting videos getting posted on the Metal Hammer account.
Yes.
Instagram account, I should say. what the fuck was going on?
Yeah, that was the opening ceremony, I believe, I posted.
So we did a bit on this with Jonathan last year, but just to kind of summarise, Midgard's Blot is kind of a very spiritually in touch metal festival.
Yes.
In the heart of Norway, isn't it?
It's like history meets extreme metal.
Right. Okay.
So it's actually, it takes place in a museum, essentially. It's like a part outdoor museum, but also indoors, sort of this, these Viking burial mounds, where, yeah, lots of, well, I guess about 1,000 years ago, there were a lot of rich Viking families living around there. There was an old great hall built there. People were buried there, obviously. And they've kind of, I think it's like the oldest sort of kind of museum in Norway, like outdoor sort of archaeological kind of museum, I suppose. So it's quite significant. And it's a place called Bor, which is kind of like an hour south of Oslo. Mm-hmm. And it's right on the coast as well. So it's a really atmospheric kind of spiritual place, I guess. It's got a lot of history to it. So they have kind of created this metal festival on top of these, well, not on top of the burial grounds, but right next to them, where they've kind of reconstructed a great hall, a Viking great hall. And I'm not sure if they do it for the festival, but they make this sort of gate, this kind of like Viking fortress gate thing that you go into to get to the main arena, essentially. So it's really cool. So you feel like you're sort of taken back in time to some kind of Viking world. So it's really cool.
They had some weird rituals and stuff going on as well, didn't they?
Yeah, they have an opening ritual. So when they first open the arena at like 4 o'clock on the Thursday, they have this great big ritual or like ceremony where they're sort of in-house band, I suppose they kind of are. It's like this folk group. And they all dress as Vikings, and they play this like really, really cool kind of like tribal Viking folk music, like on the drums and singing, and it's really, really cool. And they create this great big sort of circle around this strange wooden Odin with a giant penis.
Hang on a minute. Really
someone just walked into the studio now. Then I'm really gutted they didn't walk in about 10 seconds later, because that would have been
it's like this carving of Odin, like old school like Viking carving of Odin with this giant cock for fertility, I suppose.
Odin definitely had big dick energy, it's fine.
Yeah, he clearly did. I think he had a lot of children. Yeah, and there's like animal blood as well, and they sort of put this branch, and I'm not really sure if it's like yew or maybe, yeah, something like that, ash or yew or some kind of like branch.
What's
of a tree?
You?
It's like a yew tree.
Oh, yew. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, like,
I thought you meant like yew at first. I was like,
no,
what?
Like yew. So they sort of put this in the blood and sort of put it on Odin and say these kind of ritualistic words to the music as well, and then they get everyone to participate by doing the same and encourage them to sort of say a prayer or something to whoever they worship, whatever gods they worship. So a lot of people obviously do it to the Norse gods, because they're either like neo-pagan or just feel like akin to like the Vikings, I suppose, because a lot of the people that attracted to go there are probably Viking blooded in some way, but there are a lot of other people as well. So they kind of, there's this kind of very inclusive kind of, it is very, very inclusive. And they it just encourage you to sort of give it to pray to whatever gods you want. But right. I didn't hear any Satan, which was sad.
There was what you pray to?
I didn't actually do it because Jonathan got in there right before me and I was gutted.
Of course he did. Of course he did.
I was gutted and he like got right in there, put the blood all over his face and started like saying, oh, to Ragnarok, which was, and he was the last person. And Ragnarok is the end of the world, if you know Norse myth. So I was like, well, you had to do it to
Marvel
Ragnarok.
Movies.
Yeah, like you had to do it to that because you were the last person. Like you made yourself the last person by doing that.
I can't believe you didn't get to say a prayer.
Stitched you up there, mate.
I know. He went in right before me and he had said beforehand, oh, I'm doing it to Ragnarok. And I was like, oh, okay. And I was thinking, oh, I'll probably just do it to Freya. And then he got in before me.
Unbelievable. What bands were playing across the weekend then? Were there any particular highlights?
Really good lineup. So it opened with Garlsward.
Oh shit, nice.
Yeah, so that was the first band and that was amazing. He did a lot of his new stuff, which was really, really good live. And then that night was Ivar Bornson and Ina Selvig. So with their folk stuff. And it was mesmerizing. I didn't actually take any photos of that because I was like so mesmerized.
Was it Skugshaw or Hugshaw?
It was both of it.
Okay.
It was like all of it. So they did this like special performance for Midgardsblot because they've been involved, or at least Ivar has been involved with the sort of setting up of the festival since it started, and it was its 5-year anniversary. So yeah, they did this special performance. It was just amazing. It was really magical. So that was really, really cool. And then the next day, there were quite a few bands on the next day. So it was this, they were quite a cool sort of stoner doom thing, which obviously I love. And they sounded a bit like Weed Eater. Yeah. So it was, they were called Joint Hugger and I really liked them because I liked them before I went. I was like, I'm going to go see them because they did this thing on Facebook that people were sharing, where they had bought tickets to the event because they're a local band. They'd bought tickets beforehand and then they obviously got on the lineup. So they still had their tickets, but they also were had band passes then as well. So rather than selling them, they decided to give them away. And they did this like Facebook giveaway where it was primarily for people that had never been before and they had to sort of like write on the Facebook why they deserved a ticket and all that kind of stuff. And then they'd give people the tickets and it was really, really nice. So it was a really cool thing to do rather than selling your tickets or whatever. So that was cool. So I went to watch them and that was really cool because it was inside the Great Hall. So all of the sort of wood was kind of like vibrating from the like really, really heavy.
That's awesome.
Heavy, like sludgy doom. So that was really cool. And then I also saw this Chinese band, Chinese black metal band called Zuriaki.
Wow, that's interesting.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was
them.
Super cool. Like they were meant to play the main stage, but there was a problem with flights. They ended up in the Great Hall. And I think that was better because it was all dark in there and like mysterious and they're really atmospheric. And they were really, really cool. They wear sort of Chinese hats, those like traditional like there's traditional hats that you just like associate with the rice, like the rice growing and stuff like that. Those, I don't know what they're called.
The long, like kind of domed, not domed. But
yeah, yeah.
I think I know the kind of thing.
Yeah, like there's really wide.
Almost like a pyramid with a round bottom. I don't know what you call that shape.
Okay. No, I'm not sure what you call them. But those hats, they were wearing those and they were wearing all black and you couldn't see their faces. And they had like this sort of veil over their hats. So it kind of looked like a beekeeper. Like coming down.
Have you met a beekeeper?
Yeah. But it was really, really, really cool. And they were burning something as well, which irritated my throat because I had a bit of a cold over the weekend. But I kind of like went out and then went back in because I was like, no, I don't want to miss it. So it was really, really cool. It was like kind of just atmospheric black metal, but instead of having the sort of like folky, Celtic-y, Nordic sort of sounds, it had like the Chinese kind of folky sounds. So that was really, really cool. I would recommend them.
Awesome.
And then what else was on Saturday?
I'll just look this up. And apparently the hats are often called coolie hats.
Okay.
So.
Cool. Well, it looked really, really cool because they were all in black and these hats. And it was like really spooky. who else played? That I liked. I saw Memoriam as well, who are like ex-bolt thrower and
British. Yeah.
So it's kind of cool to see them.
Some underground royalty though.
Yeah, I was like, oh, look, it's like people from the UK. I was like, oh, Birmingham accent. And then Deicide.
Oh, wow.
Headlined as well.
How are they?
On this Friday. They were really, really good. I really, really enjoyed that. Yeah, it was really, really good. Nothing more to say. Just great death metal, really. I was just like, yeah. It was really good. And then on the last day, which was the Saturday, Enslaved played, which was really strange.
It was a massive lineup, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really, really big.
Why was Enslaved strange?
It was strange because they had these weird dancers. They had like this dance troupe on stage.
What?
With them.
A dance troupe?
Yeah.
You're going to have to elaborate.
Well, there were these dancers in sequins behind them that looked kind of like shadows because it was like black sequins and they were reflecting with the lights.
So like kind of interpretive dance.
Very interpretive, yeah. Like at one point, one like kind of died on the other one and was like dragged off. And it was really strange. And then they kind of like went off stage and we were like, oh, the dancers are gone. And then they came back out and they'd all taken off their sequins and then had body paint. So it was like, oh, hello. So there were a lot of the men were like, oh, boobs, boobs on stage.
Oh, what?
Yeah, I know. So they had like gold body paint on and we're just doing this really weird interpretive dance again and like jumping up and down. And I was like, oh, that must hurt because you need a bra.
Gold,
I know. I was
someone
like, oh.
Please think of the boobs.
I know, that's what I was thinking way. Anyway, I was like, oh, that must be painful
or liberating. Others,
I mean, it could be, I guess, but it depends on how, I don't know, how big your boobs are, I suppose. Does,
yeah. This is the second week in a row we've talked about the role of boobs in extreme metal.
after Bloodstock in metal these past couple of weeks.
There we go.
Yeah, so that was interesting. And yeah, so I don't know what
sounds
else
like
to say
a lovely time.
That.
I think next year you should go and write as an experience piece about what it's like to be a dancer. And we'll just get
in metal.
Yeah, we can both do it. We'll just get painted up in gold body paint. Just
yeah, let's do it.
Piece.
Let's like get in touch with Enslaved and be like, we want to be part of this. How do we get on that dance troupe and dance for you? Because like it was a dance troupe, but they were kind of just going mad. So I feel like, you know, could do that. We could do that, right?
We'll probably like get off from doing the podcast and find out they've had 20 years of training.
I know, they probably have.
The Royal Ballet of wherever that country is.
Yeah, so
that's definitely what the Royal Ballet up to. <Bit God's blood.
laughs> It was strange. And then there was Hai Leung as well.
Oh, wow.
And they did a special ritual.
Maybe the most immersive experience in metal at the moment. If you can even call it metal.
Yeah, it was crazy. And that was everyone had come like from their tents and everything by that stage. Like everyone was there to see them. It was just like packed. I hadn't seen it that packed the whole time. And it was really, really, really cool. Yeah.
Oh, it sounds amazing. I really wish I'd been there.
Outstanding really stuff. Cool. One of the most unique and interesting festivals
it
out
is,
there.
It is, definitely.
And we will be there next year as well, because that's what we do. Well, I was doing something a bit more basic, maybe. I went for a boozy weekend in Prague and caught a bit of Metallica, which was good fun.
I saw that you had two different Metallica t-shirts for each day.
Yeah. Well, yeah, two per day.
Super
pretty
edge.
Much.
Yeah.
I was there for, that's a really geeky thing to do. Me and my friends all wanted to go see, we both basically wanted an excuse to go somewhere fun. So we thought we'd all go to Prague and catch Metallica while we were out there, which is good. Yeah. Firstly, Prague is wicked. If you're a metalhead, it is one of the most metalhead friendly cities I've been to. Obviously, a lot of people were in town for Metallica, but the whole weekend, and I was there from Friday up to and including Monday. And the whole time I saw so many people out in like so many different metal shirts, like really vague, cool underground hoodies and patches walking around everywhere as well. So it wasn't just people in town for Metallica, it's a really cool place that obviously has a good proportion of metalheads in it. It's got maybe the best metal shop I've ever been in.
Oh, yeah?
It's called the Metal Mega Shop. Ooh. And it's so good. Like, they've got the upper levels all like goth stuff. You guys would love it. and then the bottom levels all kind of band merch, but it's all sorts of weird shit. Like, they had Metallica kind of Japanese imprint load t-shirts and just really cool weird Maiden shirts I hadn't seen in ages and all sorts of stuff.
Road trip, it's
awesome. It's called the Metal, I think it's called Metal Mega Store or something like that. Wow. And it's got probably the best bar I've ever been to ever as well. It's a horror themed metal bar called Nightmare, and there's two of them. Amazing. And apparently the other one's bigger and is open later and is a bit more of like a party place, but I didn't get to go to that one. But you got in there and it's got this big pinhead and there's a Leatherface and a Freddy Krueger, and they've got all these old horror posters all around. They've got like horror visuals playing through this TV. And we walked in and they were playing Black Sabbath, and I was just like, I'm so happy. This is so on brand for me. So yeah, that was my very brief metalhead guide to Prague, but it is good. There's some other metal bars dotted around as well. It's a really great place. So yeah, Metallica was great. They had it on this, what I assume is now a disused like airfield space. It was a really cool setup actually, because kind of around the bit where you actually go into the arena, they had loads of, they still have merch stores and they also have bars set up and they have food stores as well. So it gave it a bit of a festival vibe, because like before you actually had to show anyone your ticket, you could still just go, I guess people could just turn up and drink and get some food and merch if they wanted, because it was
up the atmosphere.
Yeah, exactly. It made it really cool. Although you would have had to drive a little bit out of town and all that to get there, of course. So that was really cool. So we had what seems to be a slightly different experience from what a lot of other people had, because we bought, well, they weren't called Gold Circle, but they were called like Section A tickets. And I want to make clear that they only cost about 50 something pounds each, I think, maybe a bit more than that. But I remember distinctly that it was less to get like a good space ticket a bit nearer the front in Prague, which is part of the reason we decided to go, than it was to get like a low level ticket or nosebleed ticket at Twickenham. It was like cheaper to get like a really like banging view ticket kind of thing.
Yeah.
From where we were, the view was amazing and it sounded really good and the atmosphere was a really good laugh and stuff. I saw some people online afterwards saying that they thought the sound wasn't great and it was not very well organized in terms of getting food and drink and stuff, which wasn't really our experience. But I think that's because we got those tickets, and I think maybe the other tickets had a bit of a different thing. But bearing all that in mind, it was fucking great. I had such a good time. They played pretty much the same set list that they've been picking from across the other legs. I think this is the third European leg. I think London was on the second, or was it the first? I can't remember. But we saw them like nearly 2 months ago, wasn't it? Because it was in June, I think.
Yeah.
So that was quite a while back. And so we were wondering if they might change up the set list a bit. And they didn't too much. They're still kind of playing either Saint Anger or Frantic. They're still dropping Clover in and out. They're still swapping God That Failed with Harvester of Sorrow and songs like Ride the Lightning are going in and out. So there's a few different songs doing the rounds. But the one thing they did drop in, which was a really cool surprise, was Day That Never Comes, which they haven't played on this leg of like this stretch of the tour at all.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was really cool. And me and my mates were like having a lovely time about that, because it was really completely unexpected. The lights just dimmed. They went into this big kind of long jamming session, and my mate Jack started losing his shit because he's watched loads of these live videos where they play Dead Never Comes, and he knew what was coming, and I was a bit like, what's going on here? And then yeah, they just randomly went into Day That Never Comes. So I don't know if that is just a random drop, or I've got a small theory, maybe they're testing it out again because they've got those S&M shows coming up, so maybe they're dropping in some more slower songs to see if they can get their heads around it and make it work for the S&M shows. That's just a completely random theory, but it was weird that they did that, because it was just not on any of the other set lists they've done. So that was really cool.
A question.
Go on.
Did Rob and Kirk do one of their noodle things, and what was
they
it?
They did, and we went to the bar.
What was it?
I think they played, well, I can look it up on setlist.fm, which I should have done before this. I think they played a traditional Czech jig of some kind, but let me double check that.
It's never going to be.
Because there are a lot of people around us that definitely started jigging when they started playing it, and we didn't recognise it.
You didn't jig.
But there are other people. Well, I didn't know it. I didn't know it.
It's not going to be as good as Germany and Rammstein, though, is it?
Followed by Kirk's and Rob's Doolittle and Cooler. Yeah, they did. They played a little bit of Orion, which I recognise, and they played some of Man Unkind off the latest album. And they played something called Jozin Zed Badzin, something like that. So I think that was some song I don't know because I'm an idiot. So sorry. I presume that's maybe it sounded like a traditional song rather than like a pop song or a rock cover. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But we didn't really watch that. And yeah, then they played Frantic again. I was hoping we might get St. Anger because we got Frantic in London, but it was worth it to have Day That Never Comes. You can't really have a bad time when you've got a Metallica show with that amazing screen, really cool visuals, mountains of pyro, and they're banging through Master of Puppets, Between the Bell Tolls, Creeping Death, Stick and Destroy, one after the other. It's just awesome. So it was a great time. I didn't catch Ghost. We kind of heard, because it was like 32 degrees when we turned up and there was no shade anywhere inside the stadium, so we kind of hid around the side under a tree and like kind of half watched, listened to Ghost. But they sounded really good. And they definitely went down really well because there was a lot of
chill and stuff. Did not get the memo that the Brits were coming.
Yeah, exactly. We didn't bring the weather with us. But yeah, it was really cool. The band seemed to be really loving it at the moment. This whole thing they're doing of taking breaks in between legs of tours is obviously working out really well because they look really refreshed and they look really on it. I thought they sounded really tight. And Metallica are just in banging form at the moment. So maybe I'll try and go catch them again soon.
Well done for having a great time.
Thanks. Let's talk about some stuff that's been going on in metal this week. Slipknot have taken over the bloody world.
So good.
How good is this? Their first number one album in the UK in 18 years. Vince's number one UK album since Iowa, which is crazy, but really so exciting and richly deserved.
I love seeing Corey's tweet, which I can't remember offhand, but it basically said something like, you know, people doubted us and said that all I was doing is screaming to a mask. We weren't heavy enough and... you know, we've got a number one and always listen to your own voice kind of thing. Like, listen to yourself if you and trust in yourself, even when people are telling you no.
It's something really satisfying about the fact that they've got the number one for an album that's genuinely really fucking good. And yeah. I think the general consensus seems to be it's their best album in a while, which I would agree with.
Yeah, I really love it.
And it's got some of the heaviest songs they've written in a while as well, which I think is really cool. So it does go to show that you don't have to sacrifice anything to you know, do great things on a big mainstream level. Got number one in the US as well. They got the number one in Ireland, and I read that they beat Ed Sheeran by like 15 sales equivalents or something.
Oh yeah, 12, I think.
Is it 12? It's mad, like that, isn't it? So it does make a difference when you support these bands, people, even big ones. That's really cool. Shout out to everyone involved in the Slipknot camp. That's very exciting. Interesting to see if Tool can replicate that success in a couple of weeks.
We shall see.
Who knows? I've got no idea where Tool would chart, but given some of those streaming numbers and all the rest of it, fans are definitely there.
It would be pretty high. But I don't know how successful people are at mobilising. And I don't know. It's different, isn't it? I reckon Tool fans will maybe be a bit older and more likely to pre-order and buy all the sets and stuff. Whereas Slipknot fans seem to really get behind the last minute, everybody stream this record.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because they totally gatecrashed the US charts, didn't they, with all the albums after all the streaming everyone was doing. So who knows? It could happen. And speaking of stuff that could happen, which I was really surprised by, but I think very presently surprised, is that Liam Howlett of The Prodigy is back in the studio working on new Prodigy music.
That's interesting.
That is interesting, isn't it?
Has he said anything? Or?
Well, he said, I mean, not in an official, I mean, I guess it counts as an official statement. He hasn't like put anything out specifically in a press release, but if you head over to The Prodigy's Instagram page and Twitter as well, there's a photo of him on there twiddling about in the studio, and he said, back in the studio making noise, brand new Prodigy tunes are going to roll. So he's writing new Prodigy stuff, which is exciting, and it makes, you know, I think there's a feeling of slight conflict there, in the sense that, you know, trying to imagine the Prodigy without Keith is a very difficult thing to do, because he was such a massive part of what that band was all about. So that's going to be an interesting thing for them to all work out moving forwards. But I'm also very happy that you know, it's essentially always going to be Liam's band, really. And I'm glad that he's found it in himself to move on and at least try and, you know, do what he does best, which is producing really great music. Because I think the one situation where you can't really hold it against a band for wanting to move forward is when something like this has happened and it's totally out of their hands. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's not like they kind of split up and then half of them have got back together, or one of them's trying to do music under the Prodigy banner. Like, you know, I do trust in the fact that I still think it's Liam's IP and it's Liam's thing ultimately.
He's done it without him before, hasn't he?
Yeah, always outnumbered and never outgunned. He basically did without Keith and Maxim. And well, not necessarily because of that, but it's easily the least good Prodigy album. It was just lacking something. Mm. But I think that's more because of the direction he went with on that one. It wasn't really necessarily just because those two weren't involved. Because, I mean, they're not on at least, I think, like half of the last album. But it's just that live element to it that is just going to feel very different. So maybe that's something they've got to work out. But I don't know. In the meantime, I'm really interested to see how this works out. And, you know, I don't want a world without Prodigy in it. So I hope this works. And I hope that, you know, Liam is able to produce something really fucking amazing, which I think he probably can because he's the greatest dance producer of all time. So
the man with a Prodigy tattoo.
Quite. What else is going on? This might be a bit of you, Alice. Maybe.
Yes, this is a bit more me.
Tell us then.
So Roadburn 2020 is going to be curated by Emma Ruth Rundle and Perturbator.
That is really interesting. How do you feel about that?
They've got two curators, which is, I think, a first.
Is it?
I think so.
So Emma Ruth Rundle feels like a bit more in Roadburn's usual wheelhouse. Kind of atmospheric, undergroundy, emotionally driven, heavy, heavy music. Perturbator, though, that's really interesting.
Yeah, like synth, dark synth sort of stuff.
Yeah. So, but I mean, he obviously is a metalhead and he is in touch with that world.
Exactly.
And metal has embraced that world very much so. So I'm really interested to see how he'll do it. Like, is he going to overthink it and kind of try to make it super heavy to prove a point, or is he just going to throw in a ton of synthwave there for the fun of it as well?
I'd be curious to see if there are any weird collaborations between them or between other bands of their genres.
Yeah, they've got they've announced a couple more people as well. I can't remember. Joe Quayle.
Oh yeah.
One of them. So she's going to be there, and
these people performing.
Yes, right. There's like sort of like special performances from her. Like they call it a sort of, what do they call it? It sounds like it's like a exhibition, but it's more like an exhibition of music.
Right.
So her, and there's also, it's completely gone from my mind, the other person. I can't remember the name of the band.
Can you perchance read about it on www.metalhammer.com?
Now, literally, what I'm doing.
Well, people can do that. So yeah, Roadburn's always one of them. I mean, we just talked about Midgards, but Roadburn's another one that's kind of become one of the most unique and beloved festivals in the metal calendar every year. Next year's event is taking place April 16th to 19th in Tilburg in the Netherlands. So yeah, it could be really interesting to see what Emma and Perturbator pull out to build out the rest of the lineup, I think.
Yeah, it's I've got it up now. Sorry, I've got a bit of a funny throat. So if I can actually find it in the news story that I wrote, Cult of Luna. So,
oh shit.
Yeah, so there's,
there you go.
Yeah, so Cult of Luna, Julie Christmas as well.
Are they together as in Mariner, or apart as in both performing their own material?
Apart, but I think there's collaboration. So I think Cult of Luna's Johannes Pearson is joining forces with Perturbator.
Wow.
What?
So that's interesting.
I like the way this is going.
Grand centerpiece of the festival.
Wow.
So yeah, it seems like it'll be quite interesting.
That's the really nice thing about Roadburn, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I haven't actually been. Jonathan always comes back and raves about it, but they seem to do loads of commissions and collaborations and create music and performances you wouldn't get anywhere else.
Exactly, yeah.
Fuck, I think.
It's really, really interesting. And I definitely want to go. I've wanted to go for a few years, so.
Well, maybe you should go and, yes, talk and tell us all about it on the podcast afterwards.
I think I will have to.
Speaking of collaborations.
Nice link.
Yeah, go on then, tell us about it.
Killswitch Engage have released a video for the song The Signal Fire, and Howard is in it.
Howard Jones, yes, come on.
Howard and Jesse together in one video.
Oh, mate, honestly. I mean, we knew for months and months that Howard was going to be on the new Killswitch album. The Killswitch album is now out there. I think it's a really interesting album, and I think that there's a few different, very obvious high moments on there, and I think The Signal Fire is absolutely one of the best songs on there. I'm really glad that the song they've got Howard on is a proper fucking ripper with a big chorus. Like, it's one of the better songs on the album, and I'm glad that he's on there. But beyond anything else, just seeing Howard and Jesse in a video together just having the time of their life is just so wholesome. Fist bump near the end, I was just like, oh my god, this is like everything.
So good.
One of the best metal bands of all time, and it's just really cool to see them celebrating their legacy like that. So yeah, if you haven't seen the video yet, go to metalhammer.com and check out right now. And it's off Atonement, the new album, which is out now as well. So there you go. I think that's also reviewed in the new issue of Metal Hammer. And we've got an interview with Jesse in the new issue of Metal Hammer, where we went out to his habitat and hung out with him and talked about loads of cool shit. So you should go get that right now.
And what about the print?
Oh yeah, and there's a free Killswitch Engage art print designed by Mike D from the band. That's in the new issue as well. God, there's so much stuff we pack in there these days that I can't even keep track. Ozzy Osbourne is a mutant.
Yeah.
In other news, classic. Apparently, a study has been carried out on his DNA, and the results discovered. This was reported in the New York Times, I believe. And the results discovered a previously unseen mutation, which showed Ozzy has several genetic variations that predisposed him towards addiction, and that the mutation allowed the now sober Ozzy. That just completely made it obvious. I'm reading this off a sheet. That allowed Ozzy, who's now sober, by the way, to drink in larger quantities than the average person. So he is a mutant, and his superpower is drinking.
I'm sure they found this a few years ago.
Was.
But maybe it wasn't the same mutation, but I'm sure they found something different about
Does
him.
Does it qualify him to be an X-Men?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. He should be an X-Men. Yes. And, you know, Marvel has the rights now. They're probably thinking about casting, so get Ozzy an X-Men.
Yeah,
the petition starts
like,
now.
An Ozzy / Sabbath soundtrack to it as well.
Oh, now we're talking. should we rattle off some reader questions quickly from facebook.com/Matt Hammer Readers?
Bradley Stratton asks, which band has the best intro track at live shows? He's finding it hard to argue against Maiden with UFO's Doctor Doctor or Metallica with The Ecstasy of Gold.
Well, I think those are the best, and I think Doctor Doctor is amazing, and I think Metallica, and we should point out with Metallica, it's AC/DC, A Long Way to the Top If You Want to Rock and Roll, followed by Ecstasy of Gold, which I think is probably the best thing in metal. Although shout out to Airborne, because they used the Terminator 2 Judgment Day theme when I saw them a few years ago, and that always stuck in my mind because that's like the best intro tape ever.
Slipknot have 515.
That's good.
Just saying.
Sure.
That's a thing.
If that counts, yeah. Why not?
It does count, doesn't it?
I guess so.
does it have to be music that's not their own music?
Yeah,
saying, like,
I kind of, well, 515 leading into People We Call Shit is pretty badass. So yeah, I'd probably take that.
Good. That's what I'm choosing. I can't think of anything else, so that's mine.
Fine.
Alice, have you got one?
I can't think of any. I just think the best intro track at a live performance is just any intro track for your favourite band. It's true.
How nice.
It is true.
But it's really nice, actually. Is there any nice positive thing to say?
It just gets you like excited, doesn't it? You're like, oh my god, they're about to start. So yeah. I don't really take any notice of what they're playing. I'm just like, oh my god, it's gonna start now.
How lovely. You've been gunned here, Elf. I think this is some passive aggressiveness from Jonathan Scott Anderson.
I was just doing a link. I don't think it was passive aggressive. I thought it was just a nice link, like your link earlier.
Well, we'll see. Jonathan Scott Anderson says, inspired by Elle's ranking of the new Rammstein album at the top of her list because she's mad. No, because she loves it right now. What are some albums you possibly overrated in the honeymoon phase of their initial release?
Oh, maybe you're right.
Apparently, Jonathan declared Slipknot's The Grey Chapter and Killswitch Engage Disarm the Descent to be their best albums when they first heard them, but time has lowered them somewhat. Imagine that you put The Grey Chapter as Slipknot's best album.
Yeah, I mean,
you must have been loving that.
Maybe you're right. Maybe that's a bit of a burn.
Well, That sounds like it to me. Have you ever, I had a few of these actually.
Go on.
Well, I was thinking from last year, I rated the Skeleton Witch album really highly. Like it was like my third album, favorite album of the year. And actually this year, I've played that a lot less than other albums from last year, namely Conjurer and the Ghost album and the Carpenter Brute albums. I've still played loads, for instance, amongst others. And the Perfect Circle album, I've played that loads. I haven't played the Skeleton Witch album so much, so maybe, I don't know, maybe it just hit a useful thing for me last time that hasn't this year. I've also put down Mastodon, Once More Around the Sun. When that first came out, I was really, really digging it, and I felt like it was weighted towards its lead single, which I've forgotten, but the one that goes, This Time, is one of their best songs ever. But actually, when Emperor of Sand came out, I was like, oh, actually, this is the kind of middle ground between Crack the Sky and The Hunter that I thought the last album was, but this one's nailed it much better. And I think Emperor of Sand really puts Once More Around the Sun in its place, personally.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because that's perspective you've got from them producing another record and then doing a compare and contrast sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's not like you just tailed off it. You kind of went, oh, actually.
But yeah, but I found myself like comparatively definitely listening to Emperor of Sand more since it came out than I did in the first few months after Once More Around the Sun.
Totally fair.
And obviously, I'm just comparing albums that are all amazing, but when I'm looking at albums from the 21st century that Iron Maiden have put out, when The Final Frontier first came out, I felt like they'd finally put out something that was very close to being as good as Brave New World was, and I said at the time it was the best thing they'd done since Brave New World, and I said it was better than X, Y, and Z albums from the past. But actually, since it's come out, it's probably the album I've gone back to the least out of all their 21st century albums. And when I do go back to it, I still think it's amazing. I think The Talisman's one of the best songs they've ever written. I love the intro track and Final Frontier. Like, there's loads of good stuff on there. But I actually listen to Dance of Death more, which is probably one of their more divisive albums. But I think Dance of Death has more big, big kind of top tier Maiden songs on it than Final Frontier. So yeah, it's kind of gone from being near my favourite of their 21st century albums to probably bottom of the list. So yeah, that's,
I feel
one
like
for
you've
me.
Just gone into sort of like a Maiden trance by yourself,
yeah.
Now
I have,
because
yeah.
We're like yeah,
the Black Sabbath album as well, 13. I really loved that when that first came out, and again, if I happen to put it on now, I do think this album's really good. Like, it's got loads of really good stuff on it, but I do find myself still going back to the original OG Sabbath albums more than I ever would that one. So I think I probably overrate that Sabbath album a bit more in my mind, but not the Heaven and Hell one. That one still slams.
I have really bad most recency bias on everything, and I can't think of anything that I've listened to past this year. But when Ammo came out, Bring Me the Horizon, I got really, really obsessed with it. And I was just like, nothing this year is going to be better than Ammo. I'm just really obsessed with it. But now in August, and there's like a million albums that I've listened to and really enjoyed, and just haven't really got back to that for a while. So probably,
yeah, the Ammo albums dropped off my list as well a bit
at the beginning of the year.
But I really hit at the right time for me, and I really dug it at the time. And like when we saw them live, Nightless Blues was so good, and
yeah.
But yeah, it's just not quite stuck.
I don't know.
Maybe it's because it is so throwaway and kind of not throwaway,
whole, like,
but zeitgeisty.
Beginning of the year thing where you're a bit sluggish and a bit like, oh, everything's grey and it's wintry and I'm bored and I want something new, and you get something new and you're like, this is amazing. And you know that now the months have kind of worn on, there's been loads of stuff which is really interesting and innovative and cool. And so obviously I still like Ammo, but I don't know, not the same way as the beginning when I literally thought it would be my number one album of the year.
Anything come to mind, Alice, when it comes to albums you loved and now love slightly less?
I don't know. I don't think I have like overrated. So I don't know. If I look through my reviews, I probably have. I'd be like, oh, no, I wouldn't give that an 8 or a 9 now. But like, maybe I was just too excited about them bringing out something new. I don't know. I was thinking, oh, did I overrate like, oh, the Corrosion of Conformity one, the last one.
The one with Pepper back in the band.
No Cross, No Crown, yeah. But then I thought about it and I was like, no, because I listened to that when I was running not that long ago. So obviously I quite
run
like
to Corrosion of Conformity.
Yeah.
Wow.
And lots of black metal. Black metal's really good to run to.
Oh,
especially in the dark.
What?
It's kind of creepy and it kind of keeps you like amped, you know. It's
yeah,
like,
running in fear.
Yeah, it's good, but it's getting all your like, you know, adrenaline
yeah.
going.
Black metal adrenaline.
And it's really fast as well. You're like,
oh, man. Run fast. Let's take a couple more of these quickly because we're going to get booted out of her in a minute.
Quick, Merlin.
Oh, me? Or fun. Jeremy asks, with Slipknot at number one, what other metal bands do you think have a chance of hitting number one on the charts?
Tool.
Do we think... Tool? Yeah, okay.
Maybe, yeah.
Tool. I do think they could get it.
Avenged have done it.
I'm surprised Rammstein...
Yeah, Rammstein didn't do it, did they?
No.
Interesting. Maybe it's because they're just such a live band that people don't flock to their albums in quite the same way.
They're so big.
I mean, like, it did really well
everywhere,
but
you know, like all across Europe they're huge, so it's a bit strange really.
Interesting.
That is weird.
I guess it would be the usual suspects. You know, you're looking at bands like Parkway Drive and Ghost and that kind of next tier of bands that are stepping up into arena levels. Maybe
Nine
Architects.
Nails, they just had the massive hit with Old Town Road.
Old Town Road,
yeah, it's from The Slip, isn't it? Or is it The Slip? Night Snail song.
Old Town. Oh, right. Okay. She really threw me then.
Why?
Because I thought you were talking about the country song.
I am. It's got Night Snails in it.
What?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
It's got a Night Snail song in it.
That's true. When was their last album?
Oh, they've just been doing EPs, haven't they?
Yeah, they've been doing EPs. Hesitation Marks. They did, didn't they?
Right, I'm really thrown here. What's Old Town Road got to do with Nine Inch Nails?
It's got a Nine Inch Nails song in it.
What do you mean it's got a Nine Inch Nails song in it?
It's, I think it's something from The Slip, but I'm just looking it up so that I don't tell you the wrong thing. Oh, it's Ghosts. Yeah, it samples.
Hold on, what are you, when you say Old Town Road, what are you talking about?
The hit song Old Town Road.
Has a song from Nine Inch Nails in it?
Yeah, it has, it samples it.
Does it?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Hold on, I've got to look this up right now. I've been banging that song all year.
Well, it samples Nine Inch Nails, so there you go. And you know,
Old Town Road.
I don't know what song this is.
I'm not going to sing it. I've made the mistake of singing songs on the podcast before, and I almost did it, but I've saved myself just in time.
This is blowing my mind.
Yeah, it's from Ghosts, and that's
everyone's on their phones.
I'm looking right. Right, we've got to get out, so I've got to hold this thought and I'm going to look this up. But
it's
Old
a real
Town
thing, I'm not making it up.
Samples, Nine Inch Nails. All right, I'm going to bench that.
It's a real thing,
Merlin. I think we're just going to have to leave that there because that's just blown my mind. So, Korn. One more question then. Let's do the last one.
No, I want to do the Korn.
Oh, fine. SS Long asks, considering Korn have a new album imminent, what's your favourite song? What's your favorite Korn song and favorite Korn album from Mr. SS Long?
I love Korn, which is why I wanted us to do this one.
We'll do it quick because I'm gonna go.
I like Issues and Serenity of Suffering. That's my album choices.
Okay, so you know the question before when you talked about overrating albums?
No.
You put Serenity of Suffering is the second best Korn album ever.
That and Issues are my favorite ones. Oh, I just really love that record. I really, really love
Can
it.
Can I just
it's
pick
really
the Greatest Hits volume?
No.
They've only got one volume so far. Although they probably have got enough other ones.
And my favourite Korn song is Freak on a Leash.
Very good choices. Do you have a favourite Korn song, Alice?
I don't know.
Oh, come on, it's man. You can't give us another one, I don't know.
Yeah, I like them. I used to listen to them in the gym.
So what's your favourite Korn song?
I don't know.
You've given us three I don't knows for really questions. Right? I'm not letting you off the hook for this one.
A Korn song.
All day I think about sex or whatever it is.
That's a good one.
Adidas. Yeah, that one.
That's a good choice.
That one was the one, according to Head's book, he heard his young daughter singing around the house and that's when he realised that he might need to leave Korn.
Dream about sex, isn't it? I was trying to figure out. I was like, it's not a thing.
All day long I dream about sex.
It's dream, yeah.
My favourite Korn song is Falling Away From Me.
Oh,
and actually my favourite Korn, the Korn album I probably listen to the most is probably actually Untouchables, which is
fair.
a bit of a weird choice, but I just love, it's got so many great songs on it and I love the production on it and I just think it sounds absolutely massive. So there.
I love Issues.
I would agree
with Issues is also a fucking great
issues
album.
Probably.
Issues is probably, it's probably Issues or Untouchables for me, to be honest. Yeah. That is it for this week's podcast. We'll be back next week. Don't forget to go and pick up the latest issue of Metal Hammer with Tool on the cover. It's an absolute banger of a magazine. Loads of stuff in there. And then the Tool album is out next week and we'll be doing a bit more of a deep dive on it. So come back then. Thanks for hanging out with us. We'll see you next week. Goodbye, everybody.
Yep. Bye.